This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Good morning, Foxes fans. How the devil are you today? How's your weekend been so far? It's International Week. We know how boring it is, but I've got a special guest for you. It's none other than David Prutton, Sky Sports lead presenter of the EFL. It's Sunday. It's 10 o'clock, so it's time for the famous Foxes Aftermath show, run by the fans, for the fans. And you know what? Your opinion matters, so come on. Get them comments in. Let's get going. It's kickoff time. Come on, you Foxes.
The Leicester City machine is on the march again.
Leicester Fan TV presents a variety of content, like fan discussions, match analysis, and engaging with Leicester fans worldwide. We want your views live. Thanks to our sponsors, Everons, Follow Blinds, Pucker Pies, Pink Car Leasing, Distillers Direct, Hologram, Take Me, Nubian Co., and the Fox's Arms and Rainbows. We are live in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
How are you? How's your international weekend been? It's a good job. It's the last international weekend until March, I think it is. The England Malta game wasn't the best, was it? It was a bit dour, to say the least. But we won, qualified. What more do you want? But that's enough about England. That's enough about international football. We're going to talk about Leicester. Like I say, we've got David Prutton on. Absolutely much appreciated from Sky Sports coming on and talk about Leicester. So, why don't we bring David on, or Prutz, as he's called. Morning, sir. How are you, pal?
I'm very well, Jamie. I'm even more pumped now because the energy that you're showing on a Sunday morning is perfect. Very Sky Sports-like. I love it.
Very Sky Sports. I think I couldn't do your job, pal. I couldn't do your job. Sitting in front of millions of people talking. At least we're going to get a couple of hundred on here every Sunday morning, so it's not too bad. Anyway, David, before we get on about Leicester, you had a decent career. You played 489 games. You scored 27 goals. Hopefully, one of them wasn't against Leicester. What are you memories about? I mean, because you played for a few clubs, didn't you? You played for, let's get this right, Nottingham Forest first. I'm not going to say Knoxville, so I'll get told off for that. Wednesday, Leeds and Southampton.
Yes.
What are your memories of playing for them against Leicester?
I always remember playing the King Power. I mean, first and foremost, a wonderful place to play football, a wonderful football pitch. It was always a pleasure to play there. Not in a sense that it wasn't intimidating, because it was a hell of an atmosphere as well. But the Leicester City sides that I played against, very kind of motivated and put together to play a certain type of football, which we saw come to full fruition further down the years when you climbed the top of the Premier League. But it was always, given where we were geographically with Nottingham Forest to start with, it was always Derby, Leicester, because obviously the Forest fans always sing, "We hate Derby, we hate Leicester." just to endear myself to Foxes fans this morning. But and that was reciprocated. So when you went to Pride Park, you got exactly the same. And when you went to the King Power, you got exactly the same. Notts County was a different kind of kettle of fish entirely. But I mean, give it a few years, you never know. They might be playing each other in the same division at some stage. But it was always a tough place to play. The last kind of time I remember playing them would have been for Wednesday. I think it was a Wednesday side that was fighting for its life. It's right. Football in life in the bottom end of the it's just like they are now in the bottom end of the Championship. And I don't know whether so that'd have been around probably 2012 ish. So I don't know whether the bones of the team that eventually became Premier League champions would have been slowly but surely being put together then. And then off the back of finishing playing and then watching from afar from a media standpoint, what's happened with the football club has been staggering, really, absolutely staggering. And knowing, it's funny as well, because knowing people and coming across people that were part of that Premier League winning team, where ex-coaches and players and everyone's got their own story about that season, haven't they? Everyone's got, well, it was more them than it was more him, or it was more him than it was more them. Collectively, it was amazing. And I always say this when I bump into him, where the Wes Morgan that I knew at Nottingham Forest in League One, and I've said this to Wes's face, so I'm not speaking about his back. Not the most athletic looking footballer when I came across him as a younger footballer. So if you'd have fast forwarded and said, "By the way, that kid's going to captain a team to the Premier League," I would have probably strongly disagreed with you. But he was emblematic of what was so good about that side, I think.
To be honest, I don't think even the most staunch Leicester fan would have ever thought the season before when we nearly got relegated, the Great Escape, the following year to go on and win the league. I don't think it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. I mean, like I said to you before, I live in Spain. When we won the league, when Chelsea won the league for us that night, I was fighting the cars, running down the road with the flag behind me now, all fighting the cars, and these people looking at really strange at me and thinking, but like you say, everyone has their own story of where they were and where they are. But scrolling on 20 years, we've come down. We got relegated last year. Mm-hmm. You've done a lot of work for Sky Sports in the EFL. Mm. What was your feelings when you thought, oh, Leicester are going to be here next year? Before all the changes and Maresca came in, what were your feelings about about Leicester and how well they're going to do?
I kept a keen eye because I'm up in North Yorkshire, so Leeds is our most local team. So I chat to quite a few journos from this neck of the woods about it. So as that season was meandering to a close, you're looking at the teams that are down there fighting to stay in the division. And I think I was, and we had Dean Smith on the other week in the Leeds Leicester game. So chatting to him about coming in for those last few games, and it was a fair bit of fight from the players, but there were the kind of quality, consistent quality, that would have been needed to keep them in the division just wasn't there. And it's no secret, is it? You don't end up in the bottom three at the end of the season as a surprise. You don't kind of look round on the final day and go, well, right, that got away from us very quickly. But I think given what we'd seen from them, I was just intrigued to see how you would react off big names moving on, obviously Barnes and Maddison being two of the biggest. And I think we were all wondering what Enzo could do, how Enzo was going to go about it. The CV speaks for itself. Obviously, first time in England, stepping forward as that manager on his own. And you just kind of, and as a neutral, and it's funny because when you do work for Sky and when you do chat to people on podcasts and look at results and look at the way that fixtures could pan out, there are staunch supporters who sometimes, Don Goodman's a good example for a colleague of mine that, Leeds fans think he hates them. Forest fans think that he hates them. I presume Leicester City fans probably think that as well. But I can vouch for Don and say
when he used to play against us, he used to score all the time. I think that's where it's come from.
That's where it comes from.
He used to score against us all the time. I think that's where it comes from.
Well, and his job is to give that kind of insight and chat, isn't it? Which and so when you are looking at this, the only thing that I felt, and it's obviously in stark contrast to a Leicester City fan, is I was looking forward to seeing them in the EFL, not in any kind of snarky way at all, but to see what they do, see how they go about it, to see perhaps a different way they might attack the championship, given how quickly it's kind of changed. But yeah, and so far, I think they've thrown up so many good things. I think they've thrown up possibly a couple of questions at one stage, and I'm talking purely from a broadcasting point of view. You're looking at it going, well, the top two could be boxed off here by about February. So you're then looking for the story going, well, it's got to be the playoffs then. It's got to be the fight to stay in the division. So these last couple of results, although they are a little stumbling patch from Leicester's point of view, it brings it all together, knits it together quite nicely, I think.
I mean, you were saying, like, when the first came down, we lost Barnes, we lost Maddison, Tillemans decided he wasn't staying. Yes. We actually lost, I think it was 12 players out of contract. Sernku went, Johnny Evans went. It was quite a lot that went. And it was the nucleus of the team. Daniel Amati went as well. The nucleus of the team. And we still got people saying, oh, Leicester are going to walk the league. Mm. It's easy for them. But they didn't. I don't think all they saw was the name Leicester. And they thought they're going to walk the lead as well as Leeds and Southampton, which must be strange for you because they're both up there. So your point, you're like you say, you've got a bit of feeling for Leeds still. So you must still be fancying Leeds.
It's a funny one, that, because I don't mean this in any kind of, pat me on the back sense. I can look at them pretty objectively. It doesn't make or break a weekend whether Leeds win, Southampton win, anyone wins or loses, really. My portion of time at these wonderful football clubs was just that. It was wonderful. But that then is part of your past, and hopefully informs that. And I'd be able to talk about Leeds as dispassionately as I could any other team, because it's part of the job that you do, really. But I'm intrigued from my point of view of seeing Leicester in the Premier League and seeing Leicester now in the Championship, and it going as well as it has done. And you've got to say that back to back defeats. Yes, it's annoying going into an international break, as you mentioned, Jamie, but it undoubtedly a team that is that far ahead of the playoff places is having a very, very good season. Ipswich, I mean, they're a bit of an anomaly that have just come flying through and have done wonderfully well under Kieran. But you look at that and how they've done, and when you do look at these sides that are similar, as in dropped out of the Premier League, like a Leeds United, what Daniel's done is create a whole different vibe there. Has that been the case at Leicester? Because inherently with relegation, players are underperformed, management's underperformed, the club as a collective have underperformed. And I'm not saying this just because we've got lots of fans getting involved as well, but the fans are always there. They're 100% every week. Could the same have been said for the team of players that dropped out of the Premier League? Because inherently, as a collective, it's a failure, isn't it, being relegated? So how quickly has that been able to turn around that you enjoy what you're seeing again?
When we dropped down and all them players left, we're thinking, oh, and Maraska came in, and we're thinking, 2 years, let's give him 2 years. Because a lot of Leicester fans were thinking, we're not going to bounce. We want to bounce back straight away. But a lot of Leicester fans were thinking, are we going to bounce back straight away? They weren't sure. Maybe we needed a bit of mid-table mediocrity just for one season, rebuild again, get some players in. It's like the foreign players coming in for the first season. They always struggle. I think we all thought it was going to be the same, that we were going to drop down at Championship. We've been playing a different style of football. It might be different in the Championship because there is still a few of the old school players there that like kicking in a little bit. In the Premiership, you don't get that so much. I love a bit of old school football.
What do you think I did for 15 years, Jamie?
I know. I love it. Would you like to see 4-4-2 come back in? Because unfortunately, I don't think that's going to ever happen. But the style of play, so a lot of players, we had a few people, I've got Locks, one of our content on here, will say, oh, we're going to break the record. Straight away from the minute we started, it was going to break the record. It was on Leeds channel the other week, start of the season. He says, yeah, we're going to break that record before we'd even started the season. But a lot of fans weren't like that, or that optimistic. Uh-huh. We wanted to do well, mid-table, maybe playoffs, but maybe the year after we would be better in the Championship. But like you say, 13 out of 16 games, winning 13 out of 16 games, is some going. I don't think anybody in the media or a neutral would have thought that they would have won 13 out of 16. Mm. I mean, 2 weeks ago, there were 14 points clear of Leeds. Now they're at 8 points clear of Leeds. So did you think Leicester were going to start that way yourself? Because not many Leicester fans thought that.
No, and I think that's a really healthy dose of realism. I think, like you say, they beat Leeds on that Friday night, and that would have been 17 points between their position and the playoff places, which would have been huge at that stage. We were looking at it the other week, and it would have been ahead of the Leeds game, where on a points and games ratio at the moment, way ahead of where Burnley were. And Burnley ended up, obviously, kind of moonwalking over the line, didn't they? They found it that straightforward come the end of the season. I think you're absolutely right. I think the mitigation that comes with relegation, the emotional and the mental kind of damage it can do, and obviously when we use terms like damage and devastation, it's all relative. It's in football terms. We know exactly where this little round ball game stands in the kind of grand scheme of things. I didn't see them doing what they've done so far to the extent, as you say, that way of playing. And we were chatting, I think Joby McInniff, one of our pundits, was chatting to Yannick Vestergaard before the game. And he kind of alluded to the fact, because there was this kind of broad opinion on Leicester winning games, but not totally dominating games. And I was trying to think, well, what does that look like? Because it's at the Blackburn game, for example. There was a little bit of jeopardy in it for a little while. Vardy scores that wonderful flowing moment. And it almost felt like Leicester could go at will. So you pump the brakes a bit, we'll go again. You know what I mean? And that's the sign of a really good team that can kind of do that. So I don't know, when you're looking at people saying, oh, well, they're not dominating again, we think, well, what more do you want? They're winning games and not necessarily kind of blowing a gasket to get to that particular point. Maybe the last two games, that might catch up, because the Leeds game, where there wasn't a shot on target till I think after the 90th minute or an attempt on target. But you look at the Borough game, Borough win with a wonderful, wonderful goal. The Borough goalkeeper was busy. Some really good chances, hitting the post as well. So you are looking at a side that on another day might come back from the northeast with a 3-1 win, 3 points, cheers, see you later, back into the international break. So I didn't see the dominance in terms of the points that they've got and the wins that they've got. But I still did look at that side and think it's a hell of a good side. A hell of a good side. And I was reading Enzo's quotes off the back of the Borough game and how the team does play and how he wants to filter that down to the 21s, to the 18s, to make sure that lads that come up can do what he's asked for. Because formation-wise, so you're looking at, there was a great article in The Athletic about Ricardo Pereira playing as an inverted fullback. So obviously my generation's kind of scratching your head going, what was a fullback? And then you read it and it's fascinating. And then you look at the way the team sets up and you go, well, why is Casey there? Like, what? And then so there is a way of playing, or the way that he's putting this team together, which gives them a multi kind of faceted way of beating football teams. Because there was a point that a section of fans are making about plan B for Enzo Maresca. But my take on that is maybe that's where the plan B comes in after back-to-back defeats. But you only need a plan B when plan A goes awry. And 13 wins out of seems to me like plan A is pretty good, actually. So without
you've been watching our register show on a Monday night, because he always goes on about a plan B. Yeah. He always talks about a plan B. I know where he's coming from, because we were 0-0 with half hour to go against Middlesbrough. Mm. Middlesbrough were proactive in making the changes and went for the game. So I've just seen a question I've got to ask you in a minute. I'll come back to that one in a second.
seen the same one.
Yeah. I forgot what I was saying there. Oh, yeah, Middlesbrough. Half hour to go. Middlesbrough were proactive and went for the game. We weren't. We sat back. And even when they scored, we were still tapping it around the back. And we don't seem to... I know it's not going to happen. I know we're not going to throw Yannick up top and try and head the ball from free kicks down and get chances. But I think the style of play sometimes can be a bit slow and lethargic. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a stat I saw yesterday. There's only three clubs in that championship that have got 80% pass completion. Leicester, Southampton, and I think Hull. That's your neck of the woods, isn't it, Hull?
It's where I'm from,
Yeah, so there's only three clubs in that premiership that have got championship that have got 80%. So in my mind, there's a bit too much passing. When we won the Premier League, we were like 40% possession and we were still scoring goals.
Sorry to butt into it, because that does, I mean, listening to Enzo talk about, because he said it in a way, I think he comes across really well. He's a very charming fella, and he talks about transitions, doesn't he? If you want to watch a transition team, it's not Leicester City this season. That's basically what he said. If you want to see them in the Championship, you go and watch Leeds, you go and watch Plymouth, was another one that he referenced. And he mentioned Liverpool, obviously, kings of the transition. But the original kind of most recent Kings of the Transition, Leicester City Premier League winners. Like you say, under 50% possession, the pace of Vardy, the ability of Amarez, of Akanse to be able to cover the ground and provide that type of quality, the industry of Danny Drinkwater. That was a team. And it proved the kind of the fallacy sometimes of possession, because if it's done for possession's sake, then that's what frustrates fans, I think. It's something akin to what Russell Martin's had to try and battle with at times this season. And I use the term battle relatively, because he's come in and said, nope, hello, everybody, Russell Martin, this is what we're going to do. And regardless of the result, this is what we're going to do. So you see a team that started okay, then loses four on the spin. You look at the goals that kind of are conceded, where you're going, well, they're doing the same thing then. It's led to exactly the same thing, a goal against. But then the goalkeeper will get it down and he'll pass. So this is not new ground. This is a way of playing that these men are wholeheartedly committed to. So Enzo's saying that. That's almost his message to both his players and the fans. We do need patience, because get on board, gang. This is what we're doing. But I do understand as well the need for, because I, like I said, generationally, I'm slightly different to I finished playing 10 years ago. And I think that there is a tendency, because we've all got platforms, we can all talk about it. We're on a wonderful platform now chatting about it. But sometimes you can look at a football match, and regardless of if it's Manchester City in the Champions League a few years ago, when you look at the holding midfielder situation and who started, and you're kind of going, I mean, that feels massively overthought, that even a big club and a massive manager can kind of think, well, I'm not going to do what looks obvious, I'm going to do this instead. And us as fans, and I've very firmly placed myself in that situation, you can think, yeah, we're not going to start booing if you start launching it long to try and get a goal. We're fine with that. 20 minutes to go. We're all on board with this because we want to get a goal. But that's why these people are in positions of pressure and responsibility, and he's looked at as this good manager so far. It's only a small sample size of how to set a team up with the players that he's got. So I think the patience bit is the most key thing. But I also think it's, again, talking to Liam Rossignol, watching games at the MKM sometimes this season, where there's a restlessness after 25 minutes that they haven't scored a goal. And you kind of look at the manager and he's kind of going, can we just calm down? There's still a long time in this game. Like, get on my back if it's 95 minutes in and we're still tapping it out from the 6-yard box. I understand that. But it's about building a game and a team and a philosophy. And to the largest extent, he has done that. But I think, like you said before, Jamie, the last couple of games will hopefully give him that food for thought, that maybe a little work in the international break, you might see a little tweak in that possibly going into the next batch of games.
Yeah. I've got to ask this one, because Tom sent me this earlier about the Yeovil game, the playoff game. What's he trying to say to you there,
well,
David?
Well, what it is so I was at Southampton kind of properly treading water, then went back to Nottingham Forest, and they were in the kind of playoff places in League One. And so I'd come in theory to help them over the line, which absolutely did not end like that.
Experienced old head.
Yes. And we got into the playoffs. We played. So Yeovil was our side at the tie. First leg, I was ill, so didn't travel down to put it. Nothing to do with going to Yeovil, even though it was miles away, but I was genuinely ill. And I think we won 1-0. So come back for the second leg, City Ground's packed. And then didn't start quite right. So same team, let's crack on. Came on with about 25 minutes to go to shore the game up. Ended up getting two yellow cards, getting sent off, and then the game just completely slipping away. Two yellow cards for two fouls on the same player, Nathan Jones, who I have since spoken about this latterly, and he's in fits of giggles, because the first one I've wiped him out. The second one I've absolutely telegraphed what I'm doing, and he's just seen me coming and go, oh, and I'm like, oh, and I've fallen for a hook, line, and sinker. And then I've got sent off and thus unendearing myself to a select portion of Forest fans who for a long time would be the first thing that would be brought up. But the funny thing about working at Sky would be when you go into the building down there in Brentford, it's obviously a huge multimedia complex. And given how many channels we've got and the kind of classic Sky Sports, like, I mean, old matches, At least once a month, that game's on. At least once a month. And you kind of...
Is that because they know you're walking into the building?
Possibly, but you're kind of going... I mean, of all the game, unless it's one of those where your brain is and the memory is anchored to that forever, and I only notice that one when I walk in and not the other one. Every time I'm like, oh, for God's sake. And I still think, I'm getting there. Oh, I missed it again.
It's the same as the... well, you're always hoping when you see it that you don't get sent off.
You think it wasn't really.
Well, the thing is, it always seems to happen when I turn Sky Sports on on Sky Football. It's the Leicester Watford game.
Yes.
Do not scratch
your eyes.
I quickly turned that off. I think a lot of Leicester fans quickly turned that off.
Which, I mean,
that year, it would have never happened. What happened?
Yeah. I mean, it's sliding doors. And the commentator on that, Bill Leslie, I know he's fantastic. And it was one of those where you. Because they've all kind of quietly got their own little teams at the fall, and it's funny, all these commentators, they all follow kind of quite obscure league teams. I won't say that for fear of offending Exeter City fans, the best ones, because I think there's a Watford podcast called "Do Not Scratch Your Eyes" because it's off the back of that wonderful Bill Leslie line, and it's when you watch it. It's funny because you, like you said, and that exact game, watching it as a football fan and seeing it all pan out, your jaws on the floor. But if you're a Leicester City fan, it's like having an ex walk past, like, oh, look away. You don't want to
see it. Just could not believe what was happening that day. Absolutely not happening. And then, of course, everything else comes on. You've got Johnny Phillips on Sky Sports News.
Yes.
Doing that commentary, he went bonkers. Yeah. Oh, it was just, and it, oh, but that's one, like you say, your game's always on, and that game seems to be always on. But he'd going back and forth here, we're near the end of the show, matey. The final three, is it going to be what you think now? Leeds, Leicester, Ipswich, and then Leeds are 8 points behind, Southampton, I think, 9. You've got Sunderland there.
Yeah.
What do you see happening? If you could pick your top seven. And you go, six, isn't it?
So
top six. Who would be in your top six now? The two automatic. Do you think Leicester are nailed on, or do you think there's plenty of...
I would, without wanting to tempt fate for any of you, Fox's lot. I'm not saying they're nailed on, but I'm looking at that top two. And forgive me if I'm... selling Ipswich short here, because they've been absolutely amazing. But given the momentum of Leeds, I think it's 6 wins out of 7 now. That front four, as good as Leicester are in attack, Leeds' front four seems to have found a chemistry, I think, with Ruter, Pirot, Dan James and Somerville. I mean, the only thing with that is you look at January, does Somerville start saying, well, I quite fancy over there again now. That's a big, big thing for them. So
and also Leicester, the African nations as well, isn't it?
Correct.
A lot of teams are African. We've got 4 possibly going.
Yeah.
Now that could make a huge difference to our team.
Well, then in that case, you'd like to think that Enzo and whoever's in charge of recruitment has got half an eye on January and who they might bring in, whether it's kind of a left-sided defender and a midfielder to kind of supplement what you've got already. I'd be very surprised if they're not already looking ahead to that. But take that out and keep this team as a collective together. Leicester and Leeds are the top two. I can't fathom which one would be champions. But then after that, the fact that the top six being then Ipswich, Southampton, Preston, Sunderland. I love Preston. I think Ryan's done a cracking job. Whether they're there for the course, it remains to be seen. I take that next four is so Ipswich, Southampton, Preston and Sunderland, with the possibility probably West Brom, Hull City, with the outside chance of climbing into that. So it's a cracking question, and it's one that I'm steadfastly trying not to kind of go around the houses on. But Borough, you know what I mean? We saw Borough side get into the playoffs and who have taken their time to get going, but do seem to be going in the right direction. But
I mean, Michael Carrick was under pressure to start off. I think he didn't win a game for 4 games, was it?
They were here, there, and everywhere, and I think they were kind of again. We talk about players moving on, but they're like Tuba moving on from them, and Ramsey, key players that got them into the playoffs, meant that they were going to have to react to that. But just a great comment there with regards to Dennis Pratt coming back because even Enzo said potentially the Dewsbury Hall Pratt partnership could be one that really does bring a different dimension to what Leicester do in the middle of the park, because he talks about being a pocket player, doesn't he, about him being able to kind of take the ball in tight areas, that they're both able to do that. So, from that point of view, and I'm not nailing colours to any mast, but I'd go Leicester leads in the automatic spots and the possibility of Southampton through the playoffs. There you go.
Yeah, just talking about Dennis Pratt. I mean, I love Dennis Pratt. I think he's great. Shame about his injury he's got.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he will cover the problem that we've got. We're playing with two number eights. We're not playing with a creative number 10.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that takes a lot for me to say, considering I'm old school. It's normally 4-4-2. So all this half turn, half space.
All these numbers, double pivot, all that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. I sent a message to a friend of mine, Matt Piper, that used to play for Leicester and Sunderland.
I played with Pipes a long, long time ago in one of the junior England teams, yes.
Yeah, and I said to him about what's his half space and half turn and stuff like that. Because he's, like you say, he's about your... And he couldn't really explain it. It was hard to explain, but what Leicester are lacking, especially the last few games, seems to be in the final third. There's no creativity. Like James Maddison Madison or Youri Tielemans, there's no one can break the lines. And I do think Dennis Pratt is that kind of player that, even if he'll be playing in the number eight role with Tielemans then, with KDH, I think that might help. I think we have missed Dennis Pratt this year.
Because it's not necessarily just what that player brings. It's what he facilitates in others. So whether he creates space, whether he creates opportunities for the players to be able to go and show what they can do. But I mean, it's fascinating that you say that, Jamie, because if I was chatting to Southampton fans, Leeds fans, Preston fans, anyone up there, Ipswich, maybe take Ipswich out of it, and it reflects the level of what you've seen with your own eyes and what the expectations are. Because on the one hand, you talk about a bit of patience to see what the next season or two brings, but you give this points return to the other 20 odd teams in the division. They're going, yep, give me that. It's going into that, going into that last international break. Give us top of the league, joint top with a team, with a gap to third, with the players that we've got. Please give us that, and we'd gladly help it. So it's funny how quickly those expectations and those kind of pre-season thoughts can be, because it's something that you said that's really stuck in my head about the having patience type thing. Because you're absolutely right. I think it's around the 30 to 35% mark of teams that come down that go straight back up again. So it's not a foregone conclusion. Even though you look at the bottom end of the Premier League now and go, wow, it feels like there's a discrepancy between two-thirds of the Premier League and the clubs that come up. And I've seen a few questions there as well about the Everton situation, which, my word, the mind boggles with that, especially when you hear Chelsea and Manchester City being thrown into it as well.
Yeah, that's confusing. Very, very confusing.
But and it just goes to show, as much as, like you said, that very balanced, sensible approach of having patience. Football is right now about the here and now. It's about getting back to the Premier League. We all know that. I love covering the EFL. I love working on Premier League games as well. The power of the pyramid, I think I'll always be a huge advocate for. And I do think everyone can help each other up and down along the way. I still think there is work to be done possibly in that. But I do understand what it is to get... what it means to football clubs. You look at Leeds being out of it for 16 years, find themselves back in the Championship. Forest being out of it for over 20 years, find themselves there with a fighting chance of being able to stay in. And that really nice... It reflects on Leicester a long way. Don't worry, this isn't a PR exercise to blow smoke up Leicester City fans' backside. But there's a real collective, and it is reflected in winning the Premier League, winning the FA Cup, the managers that have been involved, the ownership of that particular club, which has been phenomenal, I think, and a real kind of holistic example of how you do things. And it's there's so much to like about it. There's that frustration that possibly came away from a couple of key values, which then sees you in the Premier League. But broadly, everyone's on board to know that. So far, again, it's a bit of a platitude, but you've got to say, this season, so far, so good, sitting top of the tree with players coming back from injury.
Yeah. There's one question here. We're talking Championship. Scott's asked about Birmingham.
Yeah.
What's gone wrong there? Rooney's, I think he's had four games and he's lost 3-1. Yeah, lost 3-1.
Well, I...
About 15th.
Yeah, well, I was asked about it when he went in, and you get obviously feedback on Twitter and all that type of stuff. So my take on it was you get rid of John Eustace when the team's where it is, and whether they're overperforming or not when he's there, that's a different thing entirely. You only bring Wayne Rooney in to get promoted. Like I said about that patience, that perception of building something. You know what I mean? How long is a build? You're not telling me that Birmingham City fans would be happy to have Wayne Rooney as manager but sit in the Championship for 3 or 4 seasons. That doesn't quite make sense to me. So I think it sounds like there's a lot of frank discussions being had. They have found themselves in terrific positions in games. The Ipswich game, for example, 2-0 up. I mean, ready to see the game out. But the quality of Ipswich, they never say die. Formidability of Ipswich shows them getting back into that game. The coaching staff is a very experienced one with himself, John O'Shea and Ashley Cole. So they're going to need all of that with regards to what they see on the pitch, because there's a situation being created there by the ownership, which puts him in a position where anything less than the playoffs doesn't look like it was the right decision, which is very simplistic. And it's way harder, obviously, on the side of the pitch and inside a football club. But we all look at that, don't we? Yeah. John Eustace leaves him in sixth. Wayne Rooney comes in. All right, we're just going to go that way then. But it hasn't gone like that so far. And it just does show as well, given his time at Derby County as well, another Leicester City favourite, that it's not straightforward. These jobs are hard. These jobs are terribly hard. So again, to dovetail it back on Tessie, someone's there. I hope they get relegated.
Yeah,
that's how brutal football fans.
He's a Leeds fan. He's a Leeds fan watching.
but then again, knitting it all together with what we've spoken about, and obviously the main ethos of being on a show such as this, and it's been wonderful, Jemmy, is it then shows how good a job Enzo's doing, doesn't it? It surely, obviously, there is an experience discrepancy between Enzo Maresca and Wayne Rooney. The fact that you've had Maresca sat at the feet of the master of how to create football clubs, how to build football, how to annihilate the opposition. And then you look at it up until 2 games ago, you're kind of rubbing your hands together going, record points, or we're going to score this many goals, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to be promoted by March. So, like I said, nice little reality check for the last couple of games, but it does go to show just what a terrific job he's done so far.
Yeah, he certainly has. Last question. You mentioned Preston earlier, and Hayden's asked, I mean, you're watching the EFL for the last 10 years or so, while you joined Sky. Tom Cannon, he was at Preston last year. I think he scored some like 8 in 20 something odd games. What can you tell us about? Because he came in, he failed his medical, but we still signed him. He got a stress fracture in his back. He's been on the bench the last 2 games, but hasn't played. What can you tell us about Tom Cannon that you've seen probably live more times than what Leicester fans have seen?
Well, I think the Tom Cannon that I saw at Preston was a key part in them almost climbing into the playoffs, which is kind of sounds like you're damning him with faint praise there. But very hard-working player, one that would... And that's the thing, you don't get into Preston North End's first team if you don't work your socks off. Obviously, you've got to allow that to a really good technical ability, which is what he's got. From what I've heard, Ryan Lowe spoke glowingly about his attitude to training, to playing, to wanting to get better. Of a progressive environment, which again seems to be what Leicester City have got. They've got a man in charge who likes to coach, don't they? And Enzo, he might have a coaching staff, but he's very much in there getting his hands dirty with the players on a daily basis. So I think he probably offers something different with regards to what you've seen so far, and the stature of players I think that Leicester City have got, because there's some big names there, aren't there? I mean, Iheanacho's one that's routinely thrown out, and whenever you see him. Whether Jamie starts and then Kelechi comes on, you are kind of going, bloody hell, they've got Kelechi Iheanacho on the bench. He's not starting the game, but he can come on and do that. Whereas,
I mean, I think Tom Cannon will be a different kind of player to Nacho and Vardy. I don't think Cannon's got the, like I say, you'll have to answer these questions. I don't think he's got the speed of Vardy, no.
No, and not many have.
No. Nacho likes dropping deep and trying to pick the ball up. Like I say, I'm not sure Tom Cannon's more of an out-and-out striker. He's probably not a fox in the box because you don't get
when you say about stretching the game, Vardy's his pace. Cannon feels more, not powerful, because Jamie Vardy's a very powerful running footballer, isn't he? And I think what he would bring, obviously there's the youth of the player as well, whether that has any bearing either way, but there is that sense of energy, legs, the ability, like you say, like as to get around the pitch and with a lot to prove. 20 years old, 21 years old. He's only a pup in terms of what potentially Leicester City have got. And I think he does offer that because, like you say, that'd be a nice mix, though, wouldn't it? If you get three different forward-thinking players that could bring three different things, whether it's Kelechi dropping off to link, whether it's Cannon being able to go beyond defences in a slightly different way to what Jamie Vardy can do. I mean, just the point there about, and it seems remiss not to mention him on having the chance to chat to proper diehard Leicester City fans. That, and it's a wonderful story from the outside looking in, and it's obviously been told a lot in and around the Leicester area, but that impact of Jamie Vardy, the size of the contribution of a player that cost, what, £1 million? And there was kind of a bit of head scratching when he came in going, I wonder what you get for £1 million. It's since shown what you do get for £1 million if you get it right, isn't it?
I mean, after the first season, Nigel Pearson, there was an offer from West Brom that came in for £5 million for him. And Nigel Pearson said, just get your head down, carry on, go away for the summer, get your head down, come back. And he started it and he gave him the confidence to play. Yeah. And then, so he could have gone to West Brom for £5 million quid, but he didn't. He stayed and he's become a legend. I will never, ever diss Jamie Vardy. I know he's probably lost a yard of pace, but don't we all at the age of 36?
We've lost
a yard of pace. We're not playing to his abilities at the minute. Like I said before, we haven't got the creative number 10 that can thread the ball through. We're not playing that way. We're not playing to his full on strengths. But if you start Nacho, and then with half an hour to go, you've got Jamie Vardy coming on. Then defenders are going to be thinking,
"It terrifies
what's going on here."
Yeah.
But you will never get anybody dissing Vardy. I mean, he's scored nearly 180 goals in his time he's here. He had a chance to go to Arsenal when we won the league, but he stayed. You don't get much. And I'm a big one for loyalty. You do not get much loyalty in football anymore. No. You don't see many players staying at one club. I know he didn't start a professional career till when he came to Leicester.
Yeah,
but he stayed. He could have gone for more money. He could have gone to Saudi Arabia this year, but no, he stayed again. He wanted to help Leicester out of the situation they're in, which you've got to love him even more. If you didn't love him before, you'd definitely love him now. That's for sure.
Yeah, it'll be a key part of it. And there's so many, and that's why I think obviously it was that. And sorry to harp on about the past, but there was that true underdog spirit of a collective of players that on their own wouldn't have done it, but together, like I said, I mentioned Drinkwater, I mentioned Kante, I mentioned Mahrez. I mean, whoever found Mahrez for whatever they picked him up for is a stunning
350,000, I think it was.
And you look at him and you watch him play in all the teams that he's played for since, and obviously he's moved on to pastures new. He looked bolted on and ready made to be part of the best teams in the Premier League. When you're kind of looking at it going, well, how. And this is what fascinates me about recruitment and how big I think it is, and how when you get it right, several players that Leeds brought in over the last two or three seasons, been nowhere near it. But you look at that recruitment of who was in there, and obviously Everton tried to go, well, thank you, we'll take that whole department, we'll see what we can do with that.
Didn't quite work.
Because I mean,
there's a story about Mahrez. He went to St Mirren for a week's trial from Le Havre.
Right.
And he didn't like it there because it was too cold. So he told his agents he didn't complete his trial.
It is very cold up there.
Yeah, I have heard that story. Whether it's a true story, it's one of them things you hear.
Again, it's a sliding doors, isn't it, of being able to bring a player in such as that. Like I said, I find it fascinating. These people in these positions are very highly skilled and very well kind of educated in that sense. But there is still, and this is what always sucks us in as fans, there is still that little gap for magic. And I think Mahrez, Kante, Drinkwater, players coming together in that way, there is something there, that intangible, where you kind of go, I can't explain that, and I don't want anyone to explain that to me. Actually, I'm okay with not knowing, because it's a glorious thing to watch. Yeah. Everyone that I've ever kind of had a vague discussion. Don't walk around asking about Leicester City's title winning side of the Premier League all the time. But everyone knows someone, don't they? That, oh, mate of mine, he was one of the people that put 10 quid on 5,000 to 1. Everybody, and I'm like, can you show me? I want factual evidence of this, because you might say that, but I've never ever met someone who's actually done it.
No, I haven't either. I haven't. According to Paul, there was only five people that had money on.
Right.
Five people. And One pulled out after the Sunderland game when we won 4-2. He cashed out. He cashed out after he beat Sunderland. I think he got about 50p, I think it was. Something like that. He cashed out. He wasn't sure. But I'm going to have to let you go now, David, because it's Sunday morning. It's early doors. We've all got other commitments. I have
got to get to church, haven't we, Jeremy? That's what we're going to do.
I'm going to take the dog for a walk on the beach in the
I'd show you the weather out here, mate, but it's blowing a gale. There's leaves flying down the street. It's great. It's horrible. I bet where you are is gorgeous.
It's lovely. It's lovely. Who have you got on TV next week for us to watch?
Oh, we're doing... I'm up at West Brom on Saturday. Leeds are playing Rotherham on Friday night. I mean, if you can keep a keen eye on that, Leicester City fans, because I'm sure you'll all be Team Rotherham on Friday,
Rotherham got a good hammering off Watford, and we've got Watford on
they
Saturday.
Did. And that's the thing. I mean, Watford can be anything. Yeah. You might meet a Watford side that gives you some, but you never know. Come.
Talking about Watford, lads and lasses, I'm flying in for that game. So if you see me at the ground, come and say hello. Only a quick visit. David, it's been much appreciated.
I'm glad
you said Leicester are going to go up as champions. I'm really glad you said that. I'm going to clip that and put that on social media somewhere.
Love it.
And then, because in a couple of weeks' time, with Leicester have got West Brom at the lunchtime game as well.
Yes, the second of December,
we're on against West Brom.
You're right. And I'll be working. I'll be there kind of waffling on top of it. But another one that I'm really looking forward to, because their squad has got themselves together in the last few weeks, but it's taken a while to get there, West Brom. So they definitely should be pulling their fingers out. So that'd be a tough test.
That'd be a tough game for West Brom as well. West Brom, it's which next Saturday?
Yeah. That's, again, another one. Watching these teams in person is always a pleasure. And I spoke to Kieran earlier on this season about what Ipswich were and what they thought they were going to do. And again, another collective. I mean, as individuals, there's some good players, but absolutely as a collective, that's where their strength's coming from at the moment.
It is. David, like I say, much appreciate you coming on.
Jamie,
you go and enjoy your Sunday afternoon, and we'll take it from there. And like I say, much appreciated, David. Thanks a lot, pal.
Pleasure.
Cheers, all. Thank you. David, there we go. Another famous Foxes Aftermath show. It's been great. Like I keep saying, it's been doing this show for years. Everyone getting up early doors to watch me on a Sunday morning waffle on. David knows what he's talking about. I make out what I know what I'm talking about. But you've had the man. He's talked about the championship. So it's much appreciated. So it's ciao, ciao. Adios. Arrivederci. Goodbye now. Come on, you Foxes.
Thanks for watching Leicester Fan TV. Thanks to our sponsors, Everards, Barlow Blinds, Pucker Pies, Pink Car Leasing, Distillers Direct, Hologram, Take Me, Nubian Cow, The Fox's Arms and Rainbows. Run by the fans, for the fans. Follow us on socials at Leicester Fan TV and visit leicesterfantv.com for all the latest news, views and videos.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Open them up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.